Funny thing just happened. I pressed the record button to record this talk, and I nearly walked into the pillar. It's a fun way to start a service. I don't think there's ever been a talk that didn't need to be done as this one. Just the worship now and the testimonies now basically sums up everything I wanted to say. So I think we can all just, you know, leave an offering or take some wine and bread and be off home. Not really. No. You're seated. I will use this opportunity. I thought it might be a good idea to ask David Suchet to do our reading tonight. So here it is.
Now King David was told, "The Lord has blessed the household of Obed-Edom and everything he has, because of the Ark of God." So David went to bring up the Ark of God from the house of Obed-Edom to the city of David with rejoicing. When those who were carrying the Ark of the Lord had taken 6 steps, he sacrificed a bull and a fattened calf. Wearing a linen ephod, David was dancing before the Lord with all his might, while he and all Israel were bringing up the Ark of the Lord with shouts and the sound of trumpets. As the Ark of the Lord was entering the city of David, Michal, daughter of Saul, watched from a window, and when she saw King David leaping and dancing before the Lord, she despised him in her heart. They brought the Ark of the Lord and set it in its place inside the tent that David had pitched for it, and David sacrificed burnt offerings and fellowship offerings before the Lord. After he had finished sacrificing the burnt offerings and fellowship offerings, he blessed the people in the name of the Lord Almighty. Then he gave a loaf of bread, a cake of dates, and a cake of raisins to each person in the whole crowd of Israelites, both men and women, and all the people went to their homes. When David returned home to bless his household, Michal, daughter of Saul, came out to meet him and said, "How the king of Israel has distinguished himself today, going around half naked in full view of the slave girls of his servants as any vulgar fellow would." David said to Michal, "It was before the Lord who chose me rather than your father or anyone from his house when he appointed me ruler over the Lord's people Israel. I will celebrate before the Lord. I will become even more undignified than this. I will be humiliated in my own eyes. But by these slave girls you spoke of, I will be held in honor." And Michal, daughter of Saul, had no children to the day of her death.
Thank you, David Suchet. Just to be clear, I don't know David Suchet. I just have a recording of him reading this. But there we go. Have you ever experienced utter joy before? The kind of joy that made you dance or do flip-flops or act like a fool. Have you ever experienced that before? Yeah? I'm South African, and I love rugby. And I recall a feeling of great exhilaration and joy after the 2007 Rugby World Cup final in France, where the Springboks, South African team, the Springboks beat England in a very closely contested final. My friends and I celebrated all night that Saturday night with what seemed like the whole town. It seemed like the whole town was out on the streets and celebrating, and we ended our celebrations with an impromptu swim in the ocean at around 5 a.m. the next morning. It was great, but very cold as well. We do seemingly silly things when we're filled with elation and joy, don't we? It's quite evident in our reading that David, too, were very joyful, very happy when the Ark of the Covenant were being brought back to Jerusalem. Why was this such a joyous occasion? Now, I think to answer that question, we have to put this episode into context. Now, our reading tonight was 2 Samuel 6, verse 12 to 23, and I'm going to share with you now something very few pastors and ministers will tell you about the Bible. So I want you to pay close attention, listen carefully. When reading the Bible, you'll find, listen to this, when reading the Bible, you'll find that every verse 12, That's every verse 12 in the Bible is usually preceded by verse 1 to 11. I'm going to say that again. Every verse 12 in the Bible is usually preceded by verses 1 to 11. So looking at these verses preceding tonight's reading, we'll see that David tried to bring the ark back to Jerusalem before, but he failed. He not only failed, someone died during the attempt. So let's listen to David Suchet again.
David again brought together all the able young men of Israel, 30,000. He and all his men went to Baala in Judah to bring up from there the Ark of God, which is called by the name of the Lord Almighty, who is enthroned between the cherubim on the Ark. They set the Ark of God on a new cart and brought it from the house of Abinadab, which was on the hill. Uzzah and Ahio, sons of Abinadab, were guiding the new cart with the Ark of God on it, and Ahio was walking in front of it. David and all Israel were celebrating with all their might before the Lord, with castanets, harps, lyres, tambourines, rattles, and cymbals. When they came to the threshing floor of Nacon, Uzzah reached out and took hold of the Ark of God because the oxen stumbled. The Lord's anger burned against Uzzah because of his irreverent act. Therefore God struck him down, and he died there beside the Ark of God. Then David was angry because the Lord's wrath had broken out against Uzzah, and to this day that place is called Perez Uzzah. David was afraid of the Lord that day and said, "How can the Ark of the Lord ever come to me?" He was not willing to take the Ark of the Lord to be with him in the city of David. Instead, he took it to the house of Obed-Edom, the Gittite. The Ark of the Lord remained in the house of Obed-Edom, the Gittite, for 3 months, and the Lord blessed him and his entire household.
It's kind of strange looking at this verse after we read the story or tonight's reading. But I think looking at these verses, there are two reasons I can see that why David started dancing like a fool before the ark. The first reason, I think, was because God wasn't angry with David, and he realized that. David realized that God wasn't angry with him. See, King David was afraid of the Lord after Uzzah died during the first attempt to bring the ark back to Jerusalem. However, hearing that the Lord blessed the house where the ark was kept, David realized that God wasn't angry with him. Have you ever felt that someone is cross with you, but it turned out they're not? Have you ever experienced that? Imagine that feeling times 1,000. I'd say that's a good reason to start dancing. I want you to listen to me very carefully now, because this is the most important thing I'm going to say, and I'm not joking this time. This is the most important thing I'm going to say tonight. God is not angry with you. I'm going to say that again. God is not angry with you. Now, you may feel tonight that he is, or that he should be, and you may even be right. He should be angry with me. I feel like that all the time. I still do. However, the reality is that God is not angry with you. You may ask the question, how can I be so sure? The short answer is that Jesus Christ carried all God's anger because of our iniquity, our failures, our sin, our irreverence and shortcomings to the cross and paid the price. He made the perfect sacrifice so that we don't have to. To put it simply, God was angry with us, and he had good reason to be angry with us, but Jesus stepped in and took the punishment in our place. That's the reality tonight. That's why God is not angry with you tonight. Now, the thing is, we human beings have this longing to be joyful. We were made to be joyful. I can think of very few people, if at all, who would prefer to cry rather than to laugh, or to be sad rather than to be joyful. So we attempt gaining joy by any means possible. You can see it in our culture. You can look at Black Friday 2 days ago. the very day after the American Thanksgiving holiday, where people give thanks for everything they have, people trample over one another for deals to get stuff they don't need, to impress people they don't know or even like, with money they mostly don't have. Doesn't make sense, but we're looking to be joyful. We were made to be joyful. Now listen to what C.S. Lewis says, and the quote will be on the screen. Our Lord finds our desires not too strong, but too weak. We are half-hearted creatures, fooling about with drink and sex and ambition, when infinite joy is offered to us. Like an ignorant child who wants to go on making mud pies in the slum because he cannot imagine what is meant by the offer of a holiday at the sea. We are far too easily pleased, and at the same time not pleased at all. The promise of infinite joy is freely open and available to all of us tonight. All we need to do is ask. Maybe you've never experienced that joy like this before. Maybe that word joy is just something, an idea for other people that you don't really know. Maybe tonight is the night where you can experience the infinite joy of meeting Jesus Christ and realizing that He and God is not angry with you. Maybe you've been knocked by life so hard and so many times that you've forgotten what this joy is like. Maybe tonight is the night where you can pray along with David in Psalm 51. Restore to me the joy of your salvation and grant me a willing spirit to sustain me. You see, when we're filled with this infinite joy, our focus shifts from us to God. Our focus shifts from us to God. And only when our eyes and our hearts and our souls are focused on Him will we be able to walk on water like Peter did. And like Peter, I often take my eyes away from Him and look at my own fear, my own insecurities, my own circumstances not really being the way I wanted it. So we can turn back to Jesus and keep our eyes on Him every day, and we should. Now, I think there's a second reason why David did a jig before the ark. And I think that reason is because David was completely and utterly sold out to God. He was all in. Let's listen to Psalm 132, verse 1 to 8, which is thought to have been written by David at the time of these events, at the time of when the ark was brought back to Jerusalem.
Lord, remember David and all his self-denial. He swore an oath to the Lord. He made a vow to the Mighty One of Jacob. I will not enter my house or go to my bed. I will allow no sleep to my eyes or slumber to my eyelids till I find a place for the Lord, a dwelling for the Mighty One of Jacob. We heard it in Ephrathah. We came upon it in the fields of Jair. Let us go to his dwelling place. Let us worship at his footstool, saying, Arise, Lord, and come to your resting place, you and the ark of your might.
I think there's something to be said about David's commitment here that we can see in this verse. It's very evident in our reading tonight and in this part of Psalm 132 that David was completely sold to God, sold out to God. He was all in with God, to use betting terms. He was fully committed to God to the point where he didn't mind looking like a fool because of it. Even when his own wife chided him for his behavior and taking off his kingly robes, which he was right to wear, for an ephod, just by the way, was the priestly work gear, like the priestly overalls of that day. David answered that it was for the Lord and no one else. Now, on a side note here, the danger is that we can very easily use this bit of scripture to justify our selfishness. In other words, we can tell ourselves that it's okay to do what I want without considering others because King David did it and he was commended for it. No. This passage can never justify selfishness. David did what he did before the Lord, not for his own sake, but in spite of his own position, for the sake of the Lord and his people. It's one thing to celebrate the Lord and encourage those around us to do the same. It is something completely different to steamroller over those around us for the sake of being noticed or praised. I think when David answers Michal in verse 22, saying, "These slave girls will hold me in honor," I think they will do so, but not because he was silly, but because he was completely and utterly sold out and committed to God. He really was all in. Listen to this story. A number of years ago, Norman Cousins wrote an editorial in the Saturday Review, which is an American weekly magazine, in which he reported a conversation he had on a trip in India. He was talking with a Hindu priest named Satish Prasad, and the man said he wanted to come to America to work as a missionary among the Americans. Cousins assumed that he meant that he wanted to convert Americans to the Hindu religion, but when asked, Satish Prasad said, "Oh no, I would like to convert them to the Christian religion." Listen to this. "Christianity cannot survive in the abstract. It needs not membership, but believers. The people of your country may claim they believe in Christianity, but from what I read at this distance, Christianity is more a custom than anything else. I would ask that either you accept the teachings of Jesus in your everyday life and in your affairs as a nation, or stop invoking his name as sanction for everything you do. I want to help save Christianity for the Christian." I'm going to read this bit again. "Christianity cannot survive in the abstract. It needs not membership, but believers." Now, David's actions in tonight's reading and elsewhere in the Bible shows us that he was clearly all in. He wasn't a member of the Jewish faith. He was a believer in the one true living God. And it shows. It shows. When we're believers instead of members, it shows in our lives. But why? Why do you think King David was so sold out to God? Let's hear some answers. Why do you think David was so committed to God? Anyone? Yes.
Love of the Lord.
Love of the Lord. Yes. Anyone else?
Because he knew he's a sinner and God had forgiven him.
Yes. Anyone else?
Because he'd seen God do amazing things.
Yes. Any more answers? Paula.
I suppose despite the way he felt, he chose to walk in the truth.
Yes. Thank you so much for all your answers. They are very true. I think David was sold out to God because David knew God closely, intimately. He knew of all the things he's done. He's seen it with his own eyes. Most of his actions tell us so. So he knew God would protect him when he faced Goliath. He knew God would save him when King Saul looked to kill him. He knew God so well that he wrote poetry and songs about God's character and who he is and his experience of God that we can still read today in the Psalms. David also knew that the ark of the covenant represented God's physical manifestation to the Israelites. In those days, the Ark of the Covenant was almost like God himself coming to town in physical form. It wasn't just some idea someone thought up. It was him physically present. That was before Christ. What about now? Do we need an Ark of the Covenant to experience God? Jesus gave us several ways to encounter and celebrate Him with the same joy that David had. We can celebrate God's presence through the embodiment of Jesus Christ when we come to the communion table later tonight. Read 1 Corinthians 11, verse 23 to 26 to see Paul's thoughts on that. Jesus also said He will leave His Spirit with us, the Holy Spirit. That means we too can get to meet Christ here now because His Spirit is with us. All we need to do is ask. Read John 14, verse 16 and 18, and John 15, verse 26, especially, if you want to read up more on that. Jesus also said that when we help those in need, it's as if we're helping Him. Do you want to meet Christ? Do you want to see Him face to face? Go out that door and help someone in need. Jesus said that's what we need to do to see Him. And these are just three ways in which we can celebrate Him and encounter Him and meet Him. My question is, are you all in with Christ tonight? Is He the only thing you can bargain on? Am I all in with Christ tonight? It's so easy to not be completely dependent on God, especially where we live. There's a saying that says, you won't know that Jesus is all you need until He is all you have. And my prayer is that we will all get to a point where we can say, Jesus is enough. I'm going to finish with a story, or not a story, a letter. As a third century man was anticipating death, he penned these last words to a friend. It's a bad world, an incredibly bad world. But I have discovered in the midst of it a quiet and holy people who have learned a great secret. They have found a joy which is 1,000 times better than any pleasure of our sinful life. They are despised and persecuted, but they care not. They are masters of their souls. They have overcome the world. These people are the Christians, and I am one of them. My prayer is that each one of us tonight will be able to write this, I am one of them. Now the question our reading leaves me with tonight is, will I strip from my kingly robes of position, from my false security, from my complacency, from my fear of people laughing at me or rejecting me, and put on the priestly work clothes for His sake? Will I allow myself to be filled with so much joy, love, and power that I am willing to risk ridicule, or even worse, for the sake of the Lord? Am I all in with God tonight, completely and utterly in full dependence on His mercy and sold out to Him alone? Am I? Are you? Would you like to be?